Welcome once again to another Roll Bama Roll preview podcast. Tonight we will be talking about the Georgia Bulldogs, a team that many have tabbed to be the surefire lock for national champions. And with us to discuss them tonight is the mayor himself, Mr. T. Kyle King of Dog Sports. Thanks for joining us, Kyle.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's just go ahead and start off with a little bit about the expectations for this season. You know, Georgia's received a lot of preseason hype, a lot of it coming from a great run at the end of last season. And a lot of people have also come around and said that, you know, they're overrated, the schedule is just too brutal. What is your expectations? What do you think that the Bulldogs should achieve?
Well, given the level of talent that's there, given the returning starters, got some exciting offensive playmakers, particularly at running back with Knowshon Moreno being backed up by Caleb King, and, of course, with Mark Richt's emergence as a coach, I think they've got a good shot of negotiating this schedule. Now, my heart tells me that we're looking at 14-0, but I can't make my head believe that. It is just too daunting a slate. But I think as we found out last year with LSU, while I don't think a two-loss team is going to get in this time, I do think a one-loss team can get in. The virtue of the schedule is that it keeps Georgia constantly in the eye of the media. You do have a couple of chances toward the end of the season to make up for a slip earlier in the season. And I think that sort of thing will make it possible if Georgia goes 12-1, as long as the one loss isn't in the SEC championship game. I think Georgia at 12-1 gets into the national title game ahead of schools from some other conferences that would go 13-0.
All right, I'll concur with that. Just being the SEC champion, at least the last few years, seems to be punching your ticket. As you mentioned, even with LSU, that's a two-loss team that still managed to get in. So you mentioned a lot of playmakers on offense. Let's talk about a couple of them. Matt Stafford's a guy that a lot of people want to knock on him, saying he really hasn't developed as the quarterback he was hyped to be, yet you almost really can't argue with the results. Is he a guy that can develop further, or is he far enough along that with the weapons in the backfield, he's where he needs to be, and that's good enough for Georgia?
I don't know that I would ever say that a quarterback is where he needs to be unless he's playing at that Peyton Manning level. I would say that the people who criticized Stafford do have something of a point. I mean, he came in and was supposed to be the greatest quarterback we'd ever had, and at least so far, I don't think he's developed quite to that level. He's a good enough quarterback. I think he's turned into more of a game manager. I think in the SEC, unless you've got a Tim Tebow in the backfield, I think your quarterback needs to be a guy like a Buck Ballew or a Jay Barker, who's just going to go out there and manage the game, not make foolish mistakes. I mean, Mark Richt managed to turn David Green into the winningest quarterback in NCAA history, not because David Green had a world-beating arm, but because David Green made smart decisions. He checked into the right plays. He was able to make the throws he needed to make, even though he wasn't a guy who was going to haul it 70 yards downfield. So I think Stafford's greatest development has been the recognition that he's playing against the big boys now. And in high school, he could just haul it off downfield and count on somebody to go get it. But you've got to be able to thread the needle a little bit better. I do think he's developed somewhat in that area. You know, they've talked about him being a first-round draft pick, even the number one draft pick, and that's not the guy I've seen. But he's developed well enough. So, no, he's not the greatest quarterback ever to put on a Georgia uniform. He is good enough. With the guys in front of him, with the guys behind him, and with the defense that's going to be backing him up, I do think he's good enough to get it done.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the receivers. I know a lot of maybe Stafford's troubles has been the receivers just dropping passes. That seems to be something that has plagued the Bulldogs over the past few seasons. Is that something that's getting better, or is that something that y'all are still going to be having to worry about this year?
I do think it is getting better. A couple of seasons ago, when it was particularly bad in 2006, there was a lot of complaining about the wide receivers coach, John Eason. And, of course, anytime you have a bad stretch like Georgia had during the middle of the 2006 season, some fans are going to start calling for some guys to be fired. And he was right up at the top of the list in a lot of fans' minds. I think they've gotten it together a little bit better. There were some issues there. Of course, earlier, there had been offensive line issues that hopefully have been straightened out. And I think with the receiving core, you know, you had a sophomore slump. with Muhammad Massaquah, but he seemed to come out of that okay. You've got a lot of new talent coming in there with guys like Green that supposedly are doing great things in practice. And eventually, you know, guys figure out how to catch passes. I mean, that part of the job is not that difficult. They certainly seem to work out some of the kinks toward the end of last year, and I'm hoping that whatever they did, they're keeping on doing it, and we'll be able to put that behind them.
All right. Now, since you mentioned the offensive line, the biggest story that's come along is the loss of left tackle Trent Sturdivant to injury. Who's going to be backing him up, or not backing him up, but who's going to be replacing him? And is that as big a knock as people are making it out to be?
I don't know that we necessarily know the answer to that right now. Some guys are going to be shuffled around. There's been talk about moving Keontae Tripp. I mean, the real thing with Sturdivant is that he returned a lot of game experience. Of course, a year ago, he had absolutely no game experience. So that says a little something about how quickly Stacy Searles was able to develop this line. There's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of depth there. And frankly, I would be a lot more worried if this were happening this week instead of 2 or 3 weeks ago. I mean, it happened in early August at the beginning of fall camp. So you've got a month of being able to shuffle guys around and get them used to playing new positions before the first game. Of course, you ease into it a little bit with a 1AA opponent in Georgia Southern. Follow that up with Central Michigan, which has shown no ability whatsoever to stop a BCS conference team from scoring. Then before you go out to South Carolina, you get a couple of guys back from suspension, including a good blocking fullback who I think is going to be able to keep some guys off of Matt Stafford. Then you go out September 20th to Arizona State, and whatever offensive line issues the Bulldogs have, the Sun Devils have a much, much worse. So by the time you get into the meat of the SEC schedule, by the time you get around to playing teams like Alabama and Tennessee, where weaknesses on the offensive line can be a real problem, I think at that point you've got a month's worth of practice time and a month's worth of playing time to overcome that. Now, if we were opening up against LSU, yeah, I'd be scared to death. But against the opening schedule that we've got, given the offensive line coach we have, the talent that's there, the opening stretch that we have on the schedule, I think we'll be able to overcome that. And frankly, if one guy's loss is going to be the difference between you being a good team and you not being a good team, you probably didn't deserve to be ranked number one anyway.
Fair enough. All right, let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. Now, Georgia ranked pretty highly in most categories, 18th in points allowed, 14th in yards allowed, 36th pass efficiency, 16th in rushing yards. That's all in the country. Nine players returned from that unit. Is this probably going to be Mark Richt's best defense that he's fielded yet?
I hope so. I mean, we did, of course, lose a couple of key guys. You saw Marcus Howard have a huge, huge game in the Sugar Bowl. So I don't discount the guys that have been lost. But like you say, a lot of them coming back. And I mentioned a minute ago how in the middle of the 2006 season, there were a lot of fans calling for some guys' heads, and I was one of them. And the guy's head I was calling for was Willie Martinez, the defensive coordinator, who I did not think had filled Brian Van Gorder's shoes very well. But Coach Martinez has grown into this role. He had always been a good secondary coach. It remained to be seen whether he was a good defensive coordinator. You know, he had a couple of just horrible, horrible games in the 2005 season, the Auburn game where we lost 31-30, and then, of course, that Sugar Bowl game against West Virginia where we were down 28-0 15 minutes into the ball game. But he's really grown into that role. He's really become more of a fiery, motivator-type coach. You see it on the sidelines. You particularly saw it in the Sugar Bowl. And that was just an instance of great game planning. I mean, Georgia came out and just knew what Hawaii was going to do, was prepared to handle it, and absolutely shut them down. And while you can't say that we exactly shut Florida down or shut Auburn down completely because they did score some points, they did hold them off long enough to be able to let the offense do their job. So I really feel like while it may be Mark Richt's best defense, I want to give a little credit to our defensive coordinator. I think it's going to be Willie Martinez's best defense, largely because he has grown into that role as a coach.
Well, since you mentioned Marcus Howard, let's talk about him a little bit. He had 41 tackles, 10.5 sacks last season. It looks like Jeremy Lomax was penciled in here at his defensive end spot. Is that a worry of replacing that production, or is this line able to step in with that? It looks like Geno Atkins was second on the team in sacks with 7.5. So replacing that 10.5 sack production, is that a worry, or is the talent there to do it?
I do think the talent is there to do it, but, yeah, you can't lose playmakers like that and not have it affect you a little bit. I will say, again, with the Brian Van Gorder, Willie Martinez style of defense that relies less on blitzing and relies more on assignment-type football, we will not have the same number of sacks. I do think that there will be enough quarterback hurries, enough quarterback knockdowns, enough instances of guys just not having time to get set and throw that while you may not have the nice big numbers of quarterback being planted on the ground every time, you are going to have a lot of guys throwing the ball away on third down. So I think at the end of the day, you're not going to have the same numbers, you know, in the stat categories, but you are going to have big numbers in keeping guys from scoring points, keeping guys from converting third down, and that's really what it's all about.
All right, moving back to the linebackers, all three return. Ellerbe in the middle. He led Georgia with tackles last year and with 93. It's a pretty impressive number. Dent and Curran on the outside. Is obviously, that's going to be a strength there. Georgia was very solid against the run last year because of that great line and those linebackers, so that shouldn't be much of a worry. But who's backing these guys up? Is that a matter of trying to keep these three guys fresh? Is there talent there to keep them going, or are these three guys just going to have to be supermen?
I don't think they're going to have to be supermen. Again, Martinez does a pretty good job of rotating guys in and out into the lineup. And, again, a lot of it is still trying to shake itself out. Curran, though, I will just say, is just a complete monster out there. He's a very impressive young man, and I think he's only going to improve. So regardless of whether we've got the same level of talent backing him up, and I think we probably do, I think those first guys, believe it or not, could actually be better.
Moving on back there to the defensive backs, it's like three starters return, Prince Miller and Asher Allen at corner and C.J. Byrd at strong safety, while Rashad Jones is the free safety. He had a couple of starts last year, though, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, he's actually fairly high on the returning tackles. Looks like he's third with 57, three pass breakouts and two interceptions. So was he more of a nickelback role player type?
Well, there was a lot of rotating in and out. And as I said, Martinez, of course, came in from being a secondary coach. So you've got a lot of utility players that actually make some real contributions. Particularly to me, though, in the secondary, and I'll admit to a certain amount of bias because I liked the kid when he came in. Asher Allen is another one of those guys. Of course, he's done some duty as a return man as well. His first G-Day game, I was over there for the spring game. We didn't have quite the attendance that Nick Saban had for his first one at Alabama, but still a few people turn out. And, of course, they, in order to avoid injuries, they tell the guys not to rush the kicker and that kind of thing, not to try and block punts. And Allen was just so excitable as an incoming kid, he couldn't stop himself. And on the other team's first touchdown, he jumped out there and blocked the extra point. Now, he broke the rules to do it, and he should have known better, but just the level of enthusiasm, I think he brings a lot of fire out there to the secondary and keeps them loose and keeps them excited. And I think that, as much as anything, has to do with how productive they are. I mean, every team in the SEC has got talent at every position. It's how motivated you are and how well you play and how intelligently you play. Now, that was not a particularly intelligent play, but it did show some fire. And I think as he has learned and grown into the role, Asher Allen has, in my opinion, grown into one of the most underappreciated players in the SEC.
All right, well, let's move on and talk a little bit about that daunting schedule. You mentioned having a 1AA team in Georgia Southern to open with, and then second week, Central Michigan, which is a team that put up a lot of points on Purdue in their bowl but really has not been terribly successful against BCS opponents. Now, at South Carolina, a team that pulled the upset over Georgia last year and really could have been a good team if not for a lot of defensive injuries, is that the first big stumbling block for y'all? And another way to ask it, is that the game that you just have to get past to make sure that Georgia is for real?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. Particularly, of course, Georgia had a long history of playing South Carolina in a rivalry game, even before the Gamecocks joined the SEC. But it's been ratcheted up a notch since they've been division rivals. Of course, Georgia has lost a few along the way to South Carolina. I think largely because we've always played, since they've been in the league, we've always played South Carolina early in the year. Whereas Tennessee and Florida, who have fewer losses to the Gamecocks, have played them late in the year. And I think South Carolina's starting 11 on both sides of the ball can play with anybody in the SEC, but just because of their recruiting situation, they don't have the depth. And so when they lose a Jasper Brinkley, they really do fall apart, as you say, like they did last year. And it's always been a very tough place to play. Columbia, South Carolina, is I'll give the Gamecock fans credit. For a team with no more history and tradition of winning than they have, those fans show up, and those fans are loud, and they make that an intimidating place to play. Stafford in his first game up there, although Georgia won that game, Stafford did not have a good game. He threw three interceptions up there. So it's a real test. It's a game you have to take seriously. I'm hoping that the guys will be focused after losing to them last year, after losing a night game at home in which they didn't score a single touchdown. And if Georgia had scored one touchdown in that game, even with the loss to Tennessee, they'd have been playing LSU for the conference championship and a shot at a national title last year. So I'm hoping they look at South Carolina as the team that robbed them of a shot at a national championship a year ago, and that they're going to go in there and take care of business. But it's a tough place to play. And again, I will say the one thing that makes me feel really good about it is I've been to two Georgia-South Carolina games in Columbia in 1996 and 2000, and we lost both of them. I didn't think there was a shot in the world of us losing either one of them, and I have vowed never to go back. And other than those two games that I've been at, we haven't lost to South Carolina in Columbia since 1988.
Well, you're quite a curse in South Carolina then. At Arizona State, another big game. This is a huge national interest game. Arizona State splitting the Pac-10 last year. It's a team that, with Dennis Erickson, a lot of people are calling, well, maybe not a lot of people, but some people are implying that they're maybe a dark horse national title contender this year. How big of a game is that? Like you said, with an advantage of a schedule like this, even if you drop one, you can make up for it. Is that a game that obviously you never want to lose one, but is that an acceptable loss for Georgia?
If we had to lose one, that'd be the one you'd want to lose, because if you lose a conference game, even if you drop one to, say, Alabama or LSU or Auburn, who's a conference opponent but who's in the Western Division, you still put yourself in a position where you're a little bit behind the eight ball and you may need some help. So, yeah, if we had to lose one, I'd rather it be that one than one of the big conference games. The exciting thing for me is, of course, and I'll be 40 this year, I've literally never seen Georgia play a regular season game outside of the South in my lifetime. And that's just something that we have been criticized for, and I think very justly criticized for. There's no reason why a program as serious as Georgia shouldn't be going out. And I applaud Damon Evans for scheduling the games. We're playing at Arizona State this year, open at Oklahoma State in Stillwater next year. We got upcoming games against Oregon out in Eugene. We got a game at Colorado in Boulder. So I think this is going to help improve the profile. Certainly, Southern Cal under Pete Carroll has helped ratchet up its national standing by going on the road and beating Auburn, by going on the road and beating Arkansas, beating Nebraska on the road. So it's a good thing. I just, from the people I know, I'm not going out there, but I know a lot of folks that are making that trip, and I just think the level of excitement in Bulldog Nation over this game, going out to play a team we've never played before in their house, is just huge. And the national spotlight, it's a real opportunity for Georgia to put up or shut up on whether this number one ranking really means anything.
All right, after coming back from Arizona State, three straight in Athens against Alabama, Tennessee, and Vandy. Most people expect Georgia to handle those three. They, just looking at the depth chart and talent returning, that should not be too daunting of a task. But then starting on October 25th, at LSU, Florida and Jacksonville, at Kentucky, and at Auburn, four straight road games. Is that the most terrifying stretch for Georgia?
Yeah, it is, and it's, here's where you have to rely on the sports cliches and take them one game at a time. Baton Rouge, obviously, is a very challenging place to play. It's the only SEC stadium Mark Richt has coached in where he's never won. Was there in 2003 in a game that Georgia should have won. They went deep into LSU territory several times in the first half and either fumbled the ball away or had to settle for field goals, wound up losing it by a touchdown to eventual national champion LSU. So I think that's there. And, Spurrier's players always talk about how the 1966 Georgia-Florida game really motivated him. In the back of my mind, I think that 2003 SEC championship game where Georgia just got blown out by LSU, I think that's sort of like that for Mark Richt, because he's had two games against LSU since then, both of which were supposed to be nail-biters and both of which were absolute blowout wins for Georgia. Now, I'm certainly not going to say that Georgia's going to go into Baton Rouge and beat LSU handily, but of the games that ought to worry me, this is the one that worries me the least. Maybe because Georgia's been very successful against defending national champions in my lifetime, but I'm not as worried as I ought to be about LSU. Of course, Florida is going to be a huge game. And frankly, I'm just glad we're back to the point where Florida considers us a huge game again, and it just remains to be seen whether the celebration last year did or didn't get in their heads. Is that going to motivate them, or is that really turned around the psychology of it? Then going on the road to Auburn, again, Auburn always a challenging place to play, but just the quirky nature of this rivalry. You know, Auburn has an all-time winning record in Athens, and Georgia has an all-time winning record at Auburn. So that's one where the home field advantage has not made a lot of difference. I mean, it's a daunting stretch run, but every one of those games is losable, but every one of those games is winnable, and as long as you're focusing on the guy in front of you, I think they can get it done. And what I'm really hoping for out of this Central Michigan game, with them running the kind of offense that they run, the kind of offenses that Urban Meyer runs, the kind of offense Tony Franklin's installing at Auburn, I'm kind of hoping that's a dress rehearsal for that Florida and Auburn stretch there, where you're actually getting some practice against this type of offense, obviously not with the same quality of player, but, you know, sort of treat Central Michigan as the scout team for the spread teams you see down the road.
All right, finally finish up with the annual rivalry game with Georgia Tech. Georgia's won seven in a row now. Georgia Tech installing a new offense, the new head coach in Paul Johnson. Should that be another streak extender?
I hope so, and you don't necessarily have any reason to know this, but every Georgia fan is acutely conscious of the fact that we've never beaten Georgia Tech 8 years in a row. They had an eight-game winning streak over Georgia in the 1950s that got to be so bad that Theron Sapp, the guy who scored the touchdown in 1957 that beat Georgia Tech and ended the streak, Theron Sapp's one of the four guys who have had his jersey retired by Georgia. The other three are a Maxwell Award winner and two Heisman winners. So that says something about how important that series was. I don't really know what to make of this team. Paul Johnson has been very successful at Georgia Southern, was very successful at Navy. It remains to be seen whether he's a guy like Urban Meyer who can translate his different offensive style to big-time football, or whether he's more like Jim Donnan, who's able to be successful at a lower level but who doesn't translate to the big time. I think it's going to take a couple of years until he gets his players in there. Again, you never can tell. It's a heated rivalry game, but with it being in Athens, with them having so few returning starters, with Georgia having a week off before playing Georgia Tech, unless Georgia Tech just really puts it together a whole lot faster than anybody thinks they're going to, I think the only chance Georgia Tech has of winning this game is if Georgia's looking ahead to the SEC championship game, which I hope they'll be going to the following Saturday. But if Georgia's focused on Georgia Tech, I really don't see this one being a contest.
All right, so just to sum up here, you are of the firm belief that Georgia can and should at least win the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be easy. It never is, but Georgia's the favorite for a reason, and if Georgia doesn't win it, it means that Georgia let it slip away.
All right, well, there you have it, folks. Mr. T. Kyle King of Dog Sports breaking down the Georgia Bulldogs for us. Thanks so much for all your help, Kyle.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll try and talk to you sometime during the season.